of the day, 10-3916, Rogers versus White. Mr. Jackson for the appellant and Ms. Welsh for the appellee. Jackson.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, I'm Donald Jackson, and I represent the plaintiff in this case, Mark Rogers. First of all, in the district court, the Honorable Judge McCuskey determined that we failed in our effort to show a prima facie case because we couldn't prove, according to the court, the fourth element of the test, of the McDonnell-Douglas test, and that was whether or not he and a fellow lead person in the Secretary of State's office were similarly situated. The court dismissed out of hand our arguments that we had produced any evidence with respect to the direct method using circumstantial evidence. We thought we had. As I understand that test, so long as you sort of put together a picture of discriminatory conduct that may be directed at the plaintiff in the case, you've created bits and pieces of so-called mosaic or a picture of discrimination. And we cited over 14 incidents in our brief of where Mr. Rogers was treated differently than his white counterpart, Mr. Deffenbaugh. And this is a case that I think is almost a poster child for similarly situated. They were almost twins as far as that's concerned. Same supervisor, same job, same responsibilities, and they both had equal responsibility for all the employees in the yard maintenance crew.
Do you argue this as a direct case in your brief?
Well, I did in my brief, but under the circumstantial evidence portion of it. We didn't have any evidence where anybody used the N-word or any direct evidence of that nature. Nor did we have statistics, but I thought we had the so-called mosaic bits and pieces. And even if you look at the supervisors, the ultimate supervisor, Mr. Russia Shelley, even in his sworn affidavit, his affidavit, he sets forth even more bits and pieces that should support this argument that there was sufficient evidence to even find an inference of direct discrimination under the direct method. But under the McDonnell-Douglas theory, the court, of course, said you didn't prove a comparative. And I think the court's determination was much too restrictive. I mean, the court, in the past, I've always believed that this requirement really required you to prove that the two comparatives were identical.
I mean, you want to focus on Deffenbaugh, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Well, Deffenbaugh didn't have much to do with this borrowing equipment problem.
Well, he did. That's the problem. Deffenbaugh had the same responsibility over protecting the equipment for the Secretary of State's office as did Mr. Rogers.
Well, there isn't any evidence that he didn't, is there?
Pardon me?
There's no evidence that he didn't protect the...
Well, but there's no evidence that he was ever involved. First of all, the problem is Rogers was the only one of the two of them that was implicated by the OIG's office in the so-called use of this equipment. It was later, of course, disproved. That evidence was disproved, that there was no evidence that Rogers had anything to do with it. And yet Deffenbaugh was never called before the OIG's office to ask for information about what he knew about this so-called open-door policy that they allegedly had at the Secretary of State's office, which later was proven to be false. But at any rate, that's my point, that Rogers had the same responsibility as Deffenbaugh, and yet Rogers was the only one that was focused on not only in the investigation about the equipment, but even with respect to the accounting for overtime office hours offline. Rogers was the only one who was called in, even though the record is clear that all three supervisors kept those hours for the employees of the yard maintenance department. Rogers is the only African-American employee in the entire department, and he was the only one who was the center of focus, not only in that investigation, but also in the investigation about this equipment. Rogers, and the third thing that the court discussed, and that was whether or not Rogers refused to go to a mandatory meeting. But Rogers denied that he ever refused to go to that meeting from the very beginning. His supervisor was never asked to attend the meeting.
Well, why don't you use Rosha Shelley as a comparative instead of Beffenbaugh? Why don't you use Rosha Shelley instead of Beffenbaugh?
Well, if I'm going to be constrained by the similarly situated criteria, Rosha Shelley is not a comparative because, first of all, he wasn't in the union. Beffenbaugh and Rogers were in the union. He was the supervisor. They were just lead people. So if I look at their job categories, I can't use him because of the restraints that we have with the definition of what.
But didn't Rosha Shelley have actual timekeeping duties?
And he was the timekeeper.
And,
right.
And Rogers really just was helping him out on that.
That's exactly right. When
is there some comparison there?
Pardon me?
Isn't there some comparison there?
Well, I believe there's a comparison, but the first thing I would expect from the court is to say, but you can't compare those two because one was a non-union supervisor who, in fact, was in charge of both Rogers and Beffenbaugh, and so they're not even on the same level of management. So I'd love to compare them, but I can't because of the past.
Well, he was involved in both of these acts of wrongdoing, though. He was involved in the borrowing of equipment, certainly.
Who was?
Rosha Shelley.
No, he was not. No, and he came.
Well, he knew all about it, didn't he? And
he authorized it.
And
Your Honor, there lies the problem. When they did this investigation, they never even bothered to ask the supervisor of the department if there was any such policy or if the fellow who was ultimately caught using the equipment ever mentioned anything to him about using or borrowing equipment. And he says in his affidavit, unrebutted affidavit, never came up in 20 years of his service with the Secretary of State's office as a supervisor. So he was not involved, and he said there was no such policy. In fact, they proved that Greeley, the fellow that actually borrowed the equipment, had signed a statement saying, I know that we cannot borrow this equipment from the Secretary of State's office. But the point is that the only focus of either investigation was Rogers.
You're eating into your rebuttal time very seriously. I just said it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess that I'll reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
And Ms. Welsh.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Mary Welsh. I'm here on behalf of the defendants, the Secretary of State, Mr. Roth, and Ms. Fitz. The question today, of course, is whether the plaintiff presented sufficient evidence for a jury to find under either the direct method or the indirect method that his discharge was the result of racial discrimination by Fitz and Roth. And the answer to that question is no. The plaintiff admits he has no direct, under the direct method, that he has no direct evidence, no smoking gun, no N-word, nothing of that sort. And also, he doesn't claim to have any qualitative data, you know, quantitative data to support a pattern of racial discrimination against African Americans. And he also doesn't have any, you know, evidence of pretext, which is the third type of, you know, circumstantial evidence, and which is the fourth step in the McDonnell-Douglas indirect method. And so the most important questions here are, is there anybody who's similarly situated, as the panel has suggested, but also pretext. And pretext would go to either the direct or the indirect method. And the problem is plaintiff hasn't been able to present any evidence that Mr. Roth and Ms. Fitz disbelieved either the Inspector General's report or the other reasons for his discharge. In fact, the plaintiff admitted in his deposition that he didn't have any such evidence to think that they didn't believe these things. And that is the, you know, the crux of the pretext argument. If the plaintiff has to show that these were not the reasons, that the defendants did not honestly believe the reasons for which he was discharged, and he admits that he can't in his own deposition. So that completely undermines his argument. But and that's
well, Rosh Shelley got demoted and Rogers got fired. Isn't that a pretty big difference in treatment?
Well, it's a pretty big difference in treatment, but it's a pretty big difference in conduct also. This is the thing. First of all, as the court noted, the plaintiff never is not using Mr. Rossioli as his comparator, and didn't use his in his arguments here. He's sort of accepting the court's invitation to do so, but that's not his argument. But even if it were, the thing is that Mr. Rossioli's misconduct is not the same as the plaintiff's misconduct. There for a couple of reasons. One is that in the OIG report, Mr. Greeley told the investigators, I took it and the plaintiff knew I took it. The OIG report, the Inspector General report also said that Pierce said, oh,
well,
I
Rosh
told...
Rosh Shelley knew all that Rogers knew, I think, didn't he?
I'm sorry?
Rosh Shelley knew everything that Rogers knew.
Well, we don't know that. I mean, what we do know is that both of them were accused of having, not the department, but the two of them, not Diefenbaugh, who's at a different location, were accused of having this open door policy. And that's one of the reasons that Rossioli was demoted, in fact. But in addition to that, and Rossioli was also demoted for the off-the-books comp time system, which was not a factor in the plaintiff's discharge. Even the arbitrator noticed that. So Rossioli was demoted for two things: for the open door policy and for the for the off-the-books system. However, plaintiff differently and quite different from Diefenbaugh. Plaintiff was discharged for several reasons. One was that he had, with Rossioli, had this open door policy, that he also knew that Greeley had taken it because Greeley said, I told plaintiff when I was being suspended, if he needed the aerator, I had it and he should call me. So he knew about it and didn't do anything about it. There's no evidence that, in fact, Rossioli had known about it before it was found in this incident started up, that the aerator was missing. And also that, unlike Rossioli, plaintiff, according to the investigators, made misstatements to him and thus, during the aerator incident investigation, and thus, hindered that investigation. Now, in that investigation, remember, Greeley and Pierce named only Rossioli and plaintiff as the instigators for the open door policy. So there was no reason to question Diefenbaugh, who was at a different place. He was the sort of lead worker, lead union guy under Rossioli, same level as plaintiff, but in a different location. And there was no evidence anywhere in the record that Diefenbaugh or his people had an open door policy, borrowed the equipment. There's just no evidence like that. There's also, and that's why there was no investigation against him, because they weren't named during the investigation. So there was no need to move on and start talking to plaintiff and Rossioli as well. Now, in addition, there are other distinctions between the plaintiff and Diefenbaugh. And one important thing is the record keeping, not the fact of the off the book record keeping. That again is not part of the discipline here. But it was that plaintiff's records were so inaccurate and so incomplete. He lost an entire year of the off the book system, that 2003 year, which was eventually found in a file cabinet near him. So again, the administration had to keep asking him again and again for records because the records that he was giving them for the off-the-books system were incomplete. And even after the off-the-books system ended, There were many instances that Fitz testified where he would give them incomplete or inaccurate records. And that's, you know, our last exhibit in our, you know, summary judgment motion and so on. There are lots of emails to him going, hey, you know, you missed out on this. This isn't attributed correctly. Can you change your records? You know, it's not what your subordinate said. He said he wanted to use personal leave. You had vacation, you know, and so on. So it just got to be the point. So that's, this is the aerator incident. There's the inaccurate, sloppy record keeping. And then there's the refusal to go to a meeting that he was told to go to because there were all of these mixed up records. He had his records. The administration tried to figure out what the overtime had been under the off the books thing. And so he needed to come to, if his people had any objections, that he could maybe help explain this. Now, remember, this is another reason, place where Diefenbaugh is not the same. Diefenbaugh, none of his people had any objections because his records were complete. The administration could figure out, verify his records. Fitz's testimony is undisputed in this case. So Diefenbaugh's records were complete and correct, and the plaintiffs were not. So there are three ways in which Diefenbaugh and the plaintiff are not the same. Diefenbaugh was not implicated in the OIG report, and so he wasn't accused of having an open-door policy. He wasn't accused of having a subordinate take something and know about it but do nothing about it. And he wasn't accused. Diefenbaugh was not accused of hindering an investigation. Diefenbaugh's records were accurate and correct, unlike the plaintiff's, and Diefenbaugh did not refuse to go to the meeting. And so for those reasons, you cannot say that plaintiff and Diefenbaugh were similarly situated because the misconduct has to be really, really similar, and here it was really, really different. Now, then the last point, even if they were similarly situated, the last point is pretext. And again, both under the direct and the indirect methods, a plaintiff has to prove that the reasons that that the defendants gave for firing him were a lie. And in fact, the plaintiff has admitted that he cannot say that he thinks that they truly believed the OIG report, even if it was shoddy, that's not a ground for saying it's racial discrimination. And if he says, I believe that they believed that they were firing me for this misconduct, then it's not, he can't prove racial discrimination under the direct or the indirect method. Unless the court has any questions.
There appear to be none. Thank you, Ms. Wells.
Yes, the court affirm. Thank you.
How much time remaining? 2 minutes. Jackson?
Thank you, Your Honor. Sometimes I believe that counsel for the Secretary of State and I are talking about two different cases because the facts she cited simply aren't the facts that I've been dealing with for well over 5 years. The department, the accusation, first of all, was that the department had an open-door policy. Diefenbaugh was part of the department. He was one of the lead persons in the department. And so one would think that, as a minimum, if there was this accusation about an open-door policy, he certainly would be one of the individuals, along with Russia Shelley, that one would go to in an investigation to find out if there was, in fact, an open-door policy. Neither one of those two were ever asked about this so-called open-door policy. Counsel would like to separate the employees in the yard maintenance department sort of neatly into those who work for Diefenbaugh and those who work for Rogers. The point is, the fact is, they both had equal responsibility for all the employees in the department. There was no division of labor here. They were all lead persons. They were both lead persons for all the employees. Greeley worked for as much for Diefenbaugh as he did for Rogers. And so you can't say that Rogers knew what Greeley was doing and then say that Diefenbaugh didn't know what he was doing. The sloppy record keeping, the record's very clear that once the records of Mr. Rogers were submitted to an auditor of the Secretary of State's office, they found that he had accurately recorded every piece of overtime work by the employees, and those employees were entitled. That was the issue, whether or not the Secretary of State's office was going to pay these guys for the so-called off-the-books overtime. And thank you, Your Honor. I guess my time's up. Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. And we'll take that case under advisement and move to the fifth.